Welcome to the Real Estate Trainer Podcast with your host, Brian Eisenhower. This podcast is brought to you by Eisenhower Coaching and Consulting. ICC provides customized and structured coaching and training programs for real estate agents and team leaders, representing many of the top producing agents in North America. ICC also offers broker and owner consulting on agents recruiting, training, and retention. For more info, visit EisenhowerCoaching.com or find us on Facebook.
So, okay, does anybody have anything they want to talk about today? I would love it when you guys have stuff to talk about.
Well, the biggest challenge we're having, Brian, out there is just lack of inventory. That's, I think, everyone's probably dealing with that, making strong offers.
Yeah.
It's just hard.
It is.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that. We talked a little bit about that last week, but I want to talk about it. I want to talk about it again too. I want to show you a chart. Yeah, this is the housing supply year over year. So this is your inventory, right? And if you go back to May of 2019, we had a very low amount of housing supply down here. And as you can see, the percentage keeps dropping off of that every single month leading up to COVID. So this is April of 2020. COVID happened in this month, really. You know what I mean? For all intents and purposes, all the regulations came down. So going into COVID, we had terribly low amount of housing supply. Then, you know, May, June, July, of course, we saw a big breakdown there. And if you remember back to April, not to toot my own horn, but I was the guy in April that was saying, hey, housing prices are going to go through the roof, when everybody else was saying, oh man, the real estate market's going to tank because everything's shut down. And I was the guy that was, and then quite a few other people started saying it too, was saying, oh no, supply and demand always controls economics. So if there's no housing supply, prices are going to fly up. And within 30 days, people started to see that was the case. And then everybody started changing their tune, saying, oh no, real estate's going to lead us out of this thing. And it certainly has, because even though Rudy brought up an interesting point there, Rudy says the biggest problem we have is there's not enough supply. And that's a very viable and definitely genuine issue. However, it's also a key indicator of how strong the housing market is right now. It tells me that prices are going to go up, which means sales are going to go up, which means agents are going to make a lot of money for the foreseeable future because of this. If that makes sense. So that's the good news. The bad news is we got to freaking find a house for our buyers right now. Like that's the bad news. But the good news is real strong housing market. You know what I mean? Great time to be in real estate. Great time to be selling. Because here's what happens. And some of you guys can remember this. We call this a problem because there's not enough houses for sale. We've had this same problem for about 7 years straight with not enough inventory and way too much buyer demand. So we've been living with this problem for quite some time. And a lot of people on the Zoom call right now, I can look at all the names, I can tell you made a lot of money during those last 7 years. The alternative to this market is we have tons of houses for sale and not enough buyer interest. And boy, you don't want that. We lived through that. That was 2007, 8, 9, parts of 10. You don't want that because that means sales volume goes down. Housing prices can even go down, which is pretty rare, but that did happen this last go round. That's a real hard market to work in where you have contingency offers. Loans are contingent until the very last day before closing. So deals can fall out last minute. Extremely hard to hold deals together in that market. So if you've only practiced real estate in the last 7 years, don't worry, it's going to change and you will wish it never had of, because this is the good market. The bad market is when we have a lot of housing inventory and low buyer demand. That's when it's a real struggle. So please understand that. You get through a few cycles, you'll start to realize this is the market you're after. The key now is to get listings and to write clean offers. That's always the key, really, but more so now than ever. So thoughts about that? I love it when you guys talk and bring stuff up. Did I generate any specific issues in there?
I have a question. So I actually have a friend that she's working with another agent, but I've been kind of keeping contact with her and just kind of see if there's anything I can help, just to kind of maybe just put myself out there if she knows anybody else for a referral. But she said that she's been getting beat out too of offers. She put an offer last week, which their offer was basically the highest, but they got beat out to an offer that did a 20% down payment and versus their 3.5. How is that? Like, let's say essentially their offers were technically the same except for their down payment. How does that affect, or how would that be a better offer than somebody coming in with a lower down payment?
Let's change this conversation, and I want everybody's help, not just me. It's a great, great question. I love it because I think we can all relate to it right now. What can we do to write offers to make sure they get accepted right now? Because he just said what I'm sure a lot of you have experienced one way or the other. His offer wasn't any different than the other guy's offer. Why'd they pick his offer, not mine?
I got one, Brian.
Okay, Logan, I can barely hear you, but you're there.
Wait, can you hear me now? Hello?
Yes.
Okay. One thing I do a lot now, I don't know if I got it from you or I don't remember. Maybe it's putting an increased deposit, especially since a lot of offers right now, they may all be the same. They may be above listing price, but what sucks the most is being in an escrow 30 days and having it fall out. So putting an increased deposit kind of shows to the sellers, hey, you know, we're going to be investing this a little bit more than most others will be. So I do that on a lot of my offers, and most of them tend to get accepted that do that.
Okay, I love that.
If I can share one, Philip here at Albert's North Valley Market Center, something that's helped. One of the things that I've been able to do that's helped and something we've added in is removing appraisal contingency. Yeah. I mean, going in and already knowing that what we're offering is going to be right or under or right under the appraisal value is ideal. And depending on who you're working with on a as a loan officer, making sure that the loan is so bulletproof going into it, you can even potentially remove loan contingency, one or the other, right? Don't remove both, but have either loan contingency or appraisal contingency already removed at the outset. And that will help button things up. And one more thing, just to throw it out there, maybe you look at, you know, taking home warranty off. I don't know if that's the thing all across California. That's a small item here. It's anywhere between $400 to $600. You know, I at times have paid for it for my buyers and they loved it, you know, with Old Republic, Crest Plan and all that good stuff. So something like that just kind of teases a little bit with the listing agent and the seller to say, hey, we're going to save some money here. They're already taking off the heavy contingency. You know, let's give this one a go. So that's something that's been helping lately too.
Great, Philip. Let me stay with Philip for a second. Let me ask you. So you're getting rid of the appraisal contingency, right? But you're keeping the loan contingency in there just in case, right? So If it doesn't appraise, that what you're saying is, well, they couldn't qualify for the loan.
Right.
So they can still get out because it doesn't appraise and the lender needed the appraisal. So you're going to, I want to make sure I flesh this out so everybody understands what you're doing.
That's right.
You're saying we're not going to qualify for the loan because it didn't appraise. So you have the same protection in there for your buyer either way.
Right. And I'm glad you brought that up because that's exactly what it is. I mean, the loan is contingent upon the appraisal. So by giving up the appraisal early on, there's really no harm to our client. And most listing agents will probably call out other things too. And I also reduce the time on our inspections. Instead of 17 days, we bring it down to 7 days or 5 days if we're pretty close to getting it. If my clients have a flexible schedule to pop in for home inspection. Things like that, we make it pretty smooth. And for the most part, I know a lot of the agents who are the listing agents in our area, or I've done deals with them as when they were the buyer's agent. So I'll call in and ask as a favor, hey, I've got these clients, this is what we're looking at doing. How do you feel your sellers are with an offer at XYZ? You know, so something like that, just kind of teeing it up with them as well.
Yeah, that's a great one, Philip. I've seen to take the inspection, reducing the time for inspections. To me, as a former listing agent, and I'm talking a long freaking time ago, I remember, it is a really long time ago, but I remember if someone said they'll remove their inspection contingencies like in 5 days, I just loved it. So what would happen is, here's how they'd get it done. They would actually have a friend or somebody that's a contractor oftentimes. And then they would literally, the day they're making the offer, you know, they're going to go look at the house, right? Well, they'd go over there and inspect it with a contractor.
Yes.
Or if we start going back and forth in offers and counter offers, you could totally get an inspector in there during that. You know what I'm saying? And it actually can really behoove your buyer client because they might realize something that needs to be negotiated or realize maybe I don't want it that bad now that I know that. So we don't go down this road. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So we can get the inspection out there first and get that nailed down. In theory, most of the time, by the time we had offer and acceptance, they could have removed the inspection contingencies right then and there, day one, because they got in and inspected it. I remember 4 years ago, we had a unique period across the country where the inventory got real tight 1 year, or at least for part of 1 year. So we were literally advising people to go out, look at property, and then try to inspect it if you want it right away. You know, we'll get on the phone with a listing agent. We'll be writing the offer, but let's get that inspection done at the exact same time as writing the offer so we could actually be stronger. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So if we know someone that has a contractor, or they know someone who they trust that knows a lot about home construction, which is shocking how many people do, encourage them to use them up front. Help them, let them help them out so they can actually get the property. I would say, hey, it's not as thorough as a home inspection. We still advise you to get a home inspection, but understand if we can get it done up front, we can get you in the home a little bit quicker in a more competitive fashion to make that offer look very, very strong. So I like that. So reducing the time for inspections, reducing the time for everything we can. Speed matters. If you take me off the market for 7 days, I don't care that much. But if you take me off the market for 17 days, I totally care as a listing agent. I like all of those really good stuff. What? Who else was there?
Brian, I've even had trouble getting into the house, you know, day one, you know, a couple hours in, getting the phone call saying we've already accepted an offer.
Yes.
So I actually was successful in convincing one of my buyers to write an offer contingent upon viewing. And that actually got us in the door. They were like, well, we have a really good offer. And I said, well, why don't you let us make an offer contingent upon viewing? And it was enough to get us in the door. I mean,
awesome. Yeah, I love it, Jessica. And I think what you can do there too is this is where you have to educate the listing agent a little bit, right? Because that listing agent, if they got another good offer, so they've got one good offer, right? That listing agent has a duty, hopefully, to get the best price for their seller. So if you might gently and very subtly might make the suggestion, hey, why don't you just use this offer against your other offer in the meantime? I'll get my client in there. In the meantime, you can kind of use this, my offer, as a negotiating piece to get the terms you want on the other offer. Because now the other offer is in a multiple counteroffer situation, right? And that's, you know, we've talked many times about listing agent strategies and how dragging offers out to get multiple offers, to get more time so that we can get in a multiple offer situation. You know what that does for your client, what that does for you as a listing agent. So sometimes you have to teach an agent to do that just to get in the door, you know? So,
and it seems like a lot of times they're not doing the multi-counter, like it's too much work.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. Yeah, there's a lot of that. They just want to get it buttoned up. You know what I mean? There's a lot of, they really do. Yeah, you're right.
And telling your clients that you can't count on that, you better put your best foot forward right away.
Yeah. And I mean, I will tell you as a listing agent, you know, that's something that I would remember in my listing consultations that separates you from everyone else is that you're going to try to get in multiple offer situations because that's how we can drive that price up and get you the highest price. So we're going to keep working to try to get, not just to get offer and acceptance and get it buttoned up. We're trying to get you the most money here. And we have an opportunity to make you an extra $10,000, $20,000, depending on your home price, $30,000, $40,000, wherever you live, if we're able to be successful at this strategy. So it really works on the listing agent side to drag offers. On the buyer side, to get you in the door, I think is extremely helpful. I'm surprised. Okay, let me ask you this. Anybody else have any other tips they like for getting offers accepted?
I sent you a message. Recently, I had an offer accepted over other offers, and she shared that it was over $10,000 that they went over our offer. But we still use the love letters.
Yes.
In the love letters, and we actually got the lender involved. I sent my offer. I CC'd my lender, and I had the lender reach out to the agent. And it turned out the agent, you know, felt comfortable with the loan officer making that connection, making themselves available for any questions. That made our offer stronger.
Veronica, I love that. Thank you. I didn't have my group chat up. Just to let you guys know, you can all see the chat. If you click the chat button down at the bottom, you can see. That is great. I was waiting for someone to talk about the love letter too. So it just so happens you sent it in a text message there or a chat message. Has anybody else used a love letter on here?
I have. Tom. I've used them on all of them.
On all of them?
Recently, yes. These last like five, six offers that I put in with a client, we've done it on all, like all of them.
Same love letter, or did you? They just love your house.
I told them to make it generic, though, to not make it specific to that one house, just to, that way I can like use it on.
It's like the feed, no address.
Just teach them how to play the housing field. You gotta.
Okay, I'm having a problem right now. I was able to pre-qualify three people in the last 2 weeks, and I'm gonna scream if somebody gets a pre-approval like these three, because they're all at 250, 250 max FHA. So okay, what's happening is
Sarah's in the Central Valley. Just to let you know, we got people from a bunch of different locations here. So I know to a lot of you that's a screamingly low price point, but 250 is below the median home price in Central California, inland. Yeah,
it has to appraise. You know, it has to appraise. FHA will only cover what it appraises for.
Yeah.
So they can't go. They can't go over. I mean, I'm telling them start looking in the 230, 240 range, because these homes are going. They're going $15,000 over asking.
Yeah. The unfortunate part is when you are down wherever you live in the lower price points, you're going to be competing with a lot of cash offers that don't need appraisal. Right. And that's the hard part. You're going to be, when you get down into any lower price point of any area, it's very hard to go. The fact you have financing is a blemish. So you need to set proper expectations of your buyers. And you got to tell them the fact that you have a loan in the 240 price range is a problem, because you're going to be competing against cash offers that don't need inspection contingencies and appraisals. So my first question to you is, who else do you know that has some money? I'm not joking. Mm-hmm. I mean, be real clear about this. I'm a business advisor. Yeah. I'm not a happy feeler realtor. You might be a happy feeler, but I'm not. I'm a business advisor. So who do you know with some freaking money? Does your dad have $20,000? Does your sister have $30,000? Could they loan it to you for 4 years at a 10% interest rate, where they make a ton more money than they're going to make anyone else right now, and help you bridge this thing if we need it? Because that's what most people are having to do in the middle of this housing crisis to get shelter for their freaking family. But if you don't talk with that type of urgency, because you're a freaking millennial and you haven't been 18 years old long enough to realize we're in a housing crisis, wake up. We're in a housing crisis. We are having too many babies. We don't have enough houses for them. Make sense? You're one of them, right? So if you want to find a home that you can actually invest in and own yourself, at least partially, you'll have the right to some title. At that point in time, you're going to have to actually, you're not entitled to it. You're not entitled to it. It's not in the Constitution. You have to go get it. It's competitive right now. See how my buyer consult sets really strong expectations? I probably wouldn't go that strong, but I am explaining something that's very unique right now. Like, you're going to have to get it. So who do you know that has money? Otherwise, you're throwing away $15,000 to $20,000 to $30,000, depending on where you live, in rent every single year. And you're never going to get on top of that. So how do we borrow a much smaller amount than that right now from someone you know, to make sure we can pay for closing costs, to make sure that we can cover any differences in appraisal, to make sure that we can do any repairs you need? Because if you're out there trying to look and wait till something cheaper comes along, oh man, that's impossible. That ain't ever gonna happen. Mm-mm. Right? I mean, that happened 20 years ago. It's just getting more expensive now.
Yeah.
Makes sense? And that's when you gotta really have those hard conversations. I mean, I'll show it to you. And I know I've shown you all this, but you can see here, this goes back to 1960. And it talks about how the average home price in America, when people talk about housing prices going down, I guess they meant right here. Because I don't know what they're talking about. Again, not to make fun of all you millennials, but you know, you really haven't been alive long enough. So all you know is up, down, up. So you think that this is the real estate market. I'm here to tell you, no, that was the first time in history that's ever happened. The real estate market is like this, up. Housing prices don't go down. Does that make sense? They just went down once and then they just kept going up again. Everybody see that? So, and a lot of people don't understand that. They don't believe me right now. And it's just misinformation out there in the media, to be perfectly honest with you, because those of us have been in the business for more than 20 years, which there aren't many of us left, they'll all agree with me, because they know real estate doesn't go down. That's the stock market. Real estate goes up. Now, yes, it did go down for a few years, and within 4 years, everybody got their money back. So if you can't hold your breath that long, we do have a problem. And a lot of people couldn't. A lot of people couldn't. But the point of the matter is, real estate's a safe investment. The reason I say find someone with money is because when is the best time on this chart to buy?
Today.
Now.
Yeah, on this chart. I mean, all the way back in 1960 was probably the best, right? And I don't see it based on this chart. I really don't see, any indication that waiting 3 months to buy a house or even waiting 3 days to buy a house is going to make it any easier for you. Right? So setting that expectation with the buyer so that they understand who they are in this whole equation, what social class they operate within. You're a buyer. You're in a different social class than a seller.
Yeah.
Sorry. It is what it is. If you're a seller, you got one of the few things everybody wants, a house. If you're a buyer, you're just like everybody. You want a house. So you need to adjust your negotiating strategy, your financial strategy to play the game. So don't be afraid to have the tough question and say, how else can we get you some money? Do you have someone who can give you a hard money, short-term, high-interest loan? I mean, and they're like, whoa, I mean, I can't imagine ever asking a family member for money. I bet you you couldn't either. Well, I'll tell you right now, if I were your father or I were your brother and you came to me and said, hey, we're trying to buy a house, I could use some financing from you and I'm willing to pay you 10%, I'd certainly think about it. Do you know why I'd think about it?
Because you're not making any money in the bank.
Right. You're making me money. That's a win-win. You're coming to me. Where am I going to get 10% on my money? It's pretty freaking hard to find without a lot of effort on my part. So if you come to me with a viable solution, I mean, don't come to me. Don't you all come to me. Tell them to go to their me's, their people, right? And ask them, and you give them that advice, and then you help them with the script and say, hey, guys, understand that if you go to these people and say, hey, if you go to your dad and say, hey, I'll pay you back in 4 years, 6 years, whatever, and I'll pay you this much interest on it to get in until I can refinance or whatever, you'll be surprised. You give them the script. I mean, you watch, you'll start to see a high percentage of your clients are able to squeeze some wiggle room out of these tight time frames on the lower price ranges. Because when they come in the low price range, it is extremely tight. And that's where you got to get them flexible. And whatever you do, don't let them wait, because it's not going to get any better. They're just sticking their head in the sand, hoping when they pull it out 6 months later, everything is going to be better. Well, I have no historical record of that freaking happening. So I don't have anything to go off of that would suggest that's the right move economically. So giving them all their options is your job, right? Isn't that our job, is to be use our full due diligence to give them all the material information that they need to make the right decisions going forward? And that's an option to them. They just probably hadn't thought of it or didn't want to go there. But again, they're a buyer in a housing crisis, you know? So it is what it is. And the good agents are getting it done. Okay. So what else? Tips for writing offers that get accepted. Has anybody thought anything else while I took that diatribe? Love letter. I love that one. A lot of you have been doing that.
Yeah. And getting
escalation clause.
Cancellation clause. Who said that?
Escalation.
Escalation clause. Thomas, explain that.
So a couple of things that we've done with some of our buyers who are putting in offers, we'd write in there, hey, $1,000 or $2,000 above. We just put in, hey, 410, you know, with an escalation clause, $2,000 over the highest offer up to 420, and then we'd also pay $5,000 over appraised value cash or through escrow. You know, different things like that.
Those are great.
Just what it's awesome. It depends who your buyer is, right? I mean. You know, not all buyers will pay cash over asking or over appraised value, but, you know, it sometimes is what it takes. We had one, it took five, we're paying $5,000 over asking, and it took, you know, 4 or 5 houses to finally get one. So it's interesting market.
Yeah, I love it, Thomas. That's perfect. I want to unpack that a little bit. So the escalation clause, just so everybody gets this, and correct me if I'm wrong or add to this, Thomas. So you're saying I'll pay $2,000 above whatever your highest offer you get negotiated is, right?
Correct.
So it's basically a Trump card, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Not President Trump, just like spades or card game Trump. Whatever you win with, we're going to top it by $2,000, right? Yeah. That's your escalation cost. So as much as the deal escalates and the price escalates in your negotiations, we'll still pay $2,000 above that, right?
Correct.
Okay. And that's perfectly legal. And that is actually, I've known about escalation clauses for about 10 years. Maybe they're older than that. I don't know. But I know they've been pretty well tested and they do work. Then you also put a cap on, did you say appraisal? Like, so rather than removing the appraisal contingency, you're saying we're going to keep the appraisal contingency. We're going to remove it, but we're going to put a cap on how much extra we'll pay if the house doesn't appraise.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Correct. So we'll put, yeah, we've had a client that, hey, if it appraised for 410, we'll still pay 415, you know, okay, even if we got in contract at 420, you know, okay, so not necessarily paying the full difference, but $5,000 over appraisal.
Got it.
If it did not appraise. Yeah.
Got it. Okay. I like that. Okay. So yeah. So everybody get that one too. So you actually have a $5,000 cap. I know some of you guys do that. Rudy, you do that, I think, if I remember correctly, I know Robin does. In that case, you were talking, you know, Thomas used a number like 5,000. So then you could really, you know, remove the appraisal and just say, hey, we'll pay up to $5,000. That's it. After that, it's on you or we all walk away type of deal. So it's another way to do it, where you put a cap and you can put the same, you know, he put a cap on his appraisal. But you could also put a cap on inspection too. Like we'll put a cap of $5,000 on inspection and appraisal. So so if we send you a request for any repair work that needs to be done, you know, it's going to be capped out at this amount. Make sense? So do that up front. Okay, I saw Philip.
Oh yes. One other thing that comes to mind is I normally will call, and that was a great point that another agent brought up about having the agent reach out. I'll reach out to the listing agent and let them know the feedback about the home and ask them what terms can we add to our RPA that will make it attractive for your client to work with us. So something like, you know, close of escrow plus 2, +3, +4, +5, you know, who's your title provider? Who's your escrow, preferred escrow? Let me make it as easy as possible that you wouldn't even need to counter us. And then that has actually gotten us into under contract twice now. And along with everything else, along with getting the lender tied in and writing our best offer out front, but definitely calling in advance, it helps us stand out just a little bit more.
I really love that. I've been kind of waiting for someone to say that one too. So that's, and I do realize it's hard because a lot of the times you will not get a hold of the listing agent. Okay. So I get that. But if you do get a hold of them, I think the first thing we got to do is say, hey, what can I do to get this accepted? Like, what do you need? What do you need my offer to say to get it accepted? And if they answer that question, you should be in good shape. Now, there will be times some agents, like if I'm the listing agent and Philip were to ask me, hey, you know, what do I need? And I tell Philip this price, this amount, this title company, all that kind of stuff. And then Philip does it and another offer comes in that's a little bit better than Philip's. I feel morally obligated to Philip where I'm actually going to call you and say, dude, I can't get it done for you. This other thing came in. So, you know what I mean? Like, so now Philip gets special treatment because of his process. Because if I tell him to do all that stuff and then I still don't get it accepted, now I look like a jerk that lied to him, right? And most good agents don't want to do that. So what they'll do is they'll actually accommodate you or give you a call back and give you another stab at it. They're not going to call everybody back, just Philip, because they told Philip what it takes to get it done. Reaching out and asking. Now, let me ask you, what do you guys do in the many instances where you cannot get a hold of the listing agent by phone? Because I would assume most of the time you can.
Text message.
Same thing, right?
Yeah.
Same thing. Like, I think the same thing might be what would you like to see in this offer so that your client will be most likely to accept it? Something like that. Or how do I need to write this offer to get it accepted? And you might need to start getting it, you know, they'll probably say do your highest and best, right? In everything. They'll be vague. So then you got to get specific on your next text message, right? Do you think a price of, you know, $620,000 will get it done? You know what I'm saying? Like you got to start asking term by term. Would close in 30 days help? You know what I mean? Things like that. You know what I'm saying? So I'm slowly going to get it out of them via text message. They typically will do it via text message.
Hey, one thing as a listing agent too, that I mean, we're starting to narrow it down to, I mean, I think we took like 13 listings the last 6 weeks or so. And I mean, it's crazy. 5 to 10 to 15 offers per house, you know, and a ton of showing. So, I mean, for the listing agent having to go through all these, I mean, when I get down to the top 2 or 3 offers, I'm calling all the lenders, so on and so forth. So I'm the type of guy that if you make it easy for me, I love you, right?
Yep.
Send an email. When you send the email, tell me the terms, right? Yeah. Tell me the purchase price. Tell me the terms. Get your lender to reach out and tell me how solid your buyer is, right?
That's good. I like that. I like that.
Then I don't have to reach out and talk to the lender and waste my time. I mean, not waste my time, but, you know, just saves me time. I mean, just because I'm getting tired of calling all these lenders, because you know what? And if you're not doing that, I would do that, because one of the offers that I was going to accept, I called the lender and the lender said, hey, no, I just wanted to talk to you about your buyer. You know, I know they have a conventional offer, this, and this. And he's like, whoa, it's not they're not conventional. Their credit's not good enough. They're putting $40,000 down, but they're going FHA. And I said, whoa, good thing I called and I checked. And this was a seasoned agent, somebody who's been in the industry for, you know, 15 years, and they wrote that offer. So always check your lenders if you're going to accept an offer. You never know what's going to happen. And so something I learned. And we were going to accept that offer, but we ended up going with a different offer because of that. We went with a conventional offer.
I love it. No, that's great. I really, really, really like that. Have the lending have the lender reach out proactively to attest to how strong the buyer is with financing. That's great. Even a text message to that listing agent, a phone call, something like that, really make you stand out. And it does. I mean, there's one thing that's real common about listing agents is they don't have a lot of time, you know, or at least they don't think they do. So if you do something that checks a box off their list of things to do, they love you. And that just like Thomas says, that checks a box. I saw Robin threw on here. What if the listing agent says, I can't tell you?
No, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Leave it to my wife to throw that one out.
They're lying.
That's kind of, well, right, but what do you do? What do you say? Well, they don't know. They could just be ignorance. I can't tell you. They think that they're disclosing something that they should.
I usually still try and get it out of them. I'll be like, hey, you know, what if we offer this? Or like, hey, where's your other offer? Like, is your offer like 5,000 above? I try to do it as much, and like sometimes it works well. It'll kind of give me a ballpark idea of what the highest offer is at. And some of them have straight up just said, like, I'm not gonna tell, or like, I won't tell you that. Just put in your highest and best.
Right. I say, I get that. My response would be, hey, I don't want you to like give away what the amounts of your offers are, but I also want to help you get your client a higher price for their home. To do that, I want to make sure that I'm higher than all the other offers. Does that make sense? Because the last thing I want to do is write an offer too low. You know, my highest and best, it won't appraise for that. So I tell them, we have a very overly qualified client here. My highest and best is whatever I need to get it done. So what gets you the highest price for your offer? What that'll still appraise? What is the amount you want to take to your seller? And I'll write it for that. I don't need to know where the other offers are. So what is the amount you want me to write it for? I don't need to know anything about the other offers. I am going to assume that the amount is high enough, unless you for some reason want a lower offer for your clients, which doesn't make any sense. So since that's not the case, I'm going to assume you're going to tell me an offer that you want to take to your clients. That's better than the other ones. So that's how I'd put it. I do think you're still going to have problems with agents that don't, I mean, if I say the word multiple counteroffers or dual agency to 90% of agents, they get extremely nervous. And when people get nervous, they do dumb things. So I can tell you right now, when they are in a multiple counteroffer situation and they don't know what's right or wrong, they'll tell you, I can't do that. And they think that they're being right and they're being ethical and they're acting with integrity. But what they don't know is they're actually not doing their fiduciary duty. They are not protecting their client's interests, because they have a perfectly good opportunity right there to negotiate a higher price for their seller, and they're not doing it. So I don't know is either a lie or it's ignorant. Does that make sense? It's one or the other. So what we got to do is just try to explain them. Okay, so just tell me what is the, you know, when you say my highest and best is $2 million and you've got a $400,000 property. So that ain't going to work. So tell me what is the best offer that you could take to your seller, and I'll write it for that, because only you know what your seller wants. So I'm not asking her about what the other offers are. I'm going to try it. Now, she's probably still going to shut me down, because now they know that they're outside their normal excuse. They don't know what to do, so they're going to get scared, but they're going to maintain their pride and just say, sorry, can't do it. Then they'll probably run around their office and tell 20 other agents how you're unethical. But that's, you know, welcome to real estate if that bothers you. That's what they do when they don't know what they're talking about. But that's a hard one, man. When they say, I can't tell you, now you have to subtly try to educate someone on what they're supposed to do when they don't really know how to do their job. And that's kind of hard. That's probably the hardest thing we do in this business, is educate the other agent. and how you do that subtly. I saw in here, Susan asked a question I want to make sure I get to. Susan asked, what do you think will cause inventory to go back up to average inventory we've seen in the last few years? Okay, so what Susan's saying is we need a little bit, we don't need to have like a buyer's market. You're saying still a seller's market, but a little bit more manageable like it was a few years ago. So we still have lighter inventory. What'll it take? I really think, you know, part of it's COVID. Like a lot of people don't want to move. They're hunkered down right now. They're afraid. So, and of course, this resurgence across the South is not helping that. So I see a lot of it has to do when COVID calms down. So my guess there is the second week in November is when COVID will go away completely. By December, I doubt that's the election, just to let you know, in case no one got the joke. Once the election's over, COVID will go away. I almost guarantee you. Like, I just don't think it'll be, anything that there'll be a lot of other stuff talking about. So my guess is next spring, we should start seeing, or, you know, next February, we could start seeing a lot more inventory hit the market. We'll probably still have awesome buyer demand at that point in time. I can't see that slowing down. So my guess is we're going to have to deal with this through November. Cause I think that the lack of inventory right now is partially COVID, people just not wanting to move right now. They just hunkering down. And number two, they don't want people coming to their house. Number three, this is more of a long-term solution, but we need builders to build more houses. That's probably the biggest problem. I can't believe I'm saying publicly in my career, but we just don't have enough home builders. And we used to have so many. And that's the reason the housing market did what it did in 2006 and 2007 is we were building so many dang homes. We oversupplied the market. And because of all the other funny business that was going on in real estate, it wasn't able to sustain because we had an equilibrium in supply and demand. You know, in most towns, they had at least 300 to 400% more new construction starts going on than they do anywhere right now. So we just don't have any new supply, but we've got a lot of new demand because one thing we're good at is making babies. So we increase the population very well. So because of that, we got more buyer demand being born every day, yet we're not building any new housing supply for them. So that's a recipe for housing crisis when that occurs. And that, so we're going to need that to get inventory back up. We're going to need more houses. The only thing we could do other than that is to cut demand. And maybe, you know, the only way the coronavirus is going to cut demand is it's going to have to eliminate a lot of our population, which I don't see happening. It's not killing a lot of people. It's killing a small percentage of people. So I think buyer demand's going to, this is supposed to be a joke in very poor taste. Buyer demand, we're still growing as a population. Coronavirus is not making a dent in that. So I don't see anything slowing demand down anytime soon. We just need inventory. And I think that's going to come from people feel comfortable getting out and moving and builders starting to build as more of a long-term. We got to get new construction starts going. It's going to be a big problem. To me, whoever our president is, come 2021, that's going to be the number one thing that slowly gets onto his agenda is we need houses because that's something our country's never faced before is a lack of shelter for its population. And we clearly have a lack of shelter. There's just not enough roofs for people to sleep under and no one's talking about it. So you can say we talked about it here first because it's going to be an issue.
Yes.
It's going to be an issue. Yeah, Philip, you're in North County, right? So, I mean, all you got to do is drive down to Figueroa, get off on the... You know what I mean? You can see a lot of people who need shelter.
Oh yeah. It's we have 85,000 homeless people in LA County. So that's kind of a norm. 50,000 in this county, the city of LA, and home prices here, the average price in the valley is like $700,000. So it's a pretty wild place. That last question about when things are normal, I've never seen a stabilized market. My entire 6-year career has been a seller, predominantly statistically a seller's market. Though I go and sell in Palmdale and Lancaster, that really is a buyer's market.
Totally.
You know, but where we're from in the greater LA area, it's always for the most part been a seller's market, except for maybe luxury and coastal properties, but that's different market altogether.
Very true. That's exactly very right. Yeah, the higher end tends to be a little bit more fickle with buyer demand. Mm-hmm. So yeah, well, no, that's the idea. So I do think this is, we're going to have to get used to this new normal here for a bit until people get over COVID. You asked me when they get over COVID. I totally am not a scientist, so I'm just going to go off what I know, which is politics. So I think we get over that in November. And then, you know, housing, you know, it's the winter and then housing starts coming on next year and we're probably back to more reasonable like 2 months of inventory numbers, which is ridiculously a hot seller's market still, but at least it's manageable, right? So anyway, well, thank you guys. Hey, I want to say thanks to all you guys for coming on here. We've got a ton of you on from a lot of the offices, and I want to keep doing that. So spread the word. We're going to do it every single Tuesday going forward at this time at 1 o'clock. So watch for this. So every Tuesday at 1, I'm going to be on here with all you guys, and we're going to talk about issues. Like today, we ended up talking about tips for writing offers that got accepted. And we had a lot of great tips for writing offers that got accepted, which I love. And next week, we'll talk about something else that's pertinent. It'll be stuff you guys bring in, too. So I love it. Well done. Great job. Thanks for your attendance. And I hope to see all of you and bring a friend next Tuesday as well, too.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
You too.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Real Estate Trainer Podcast, sponsored by Eisenhower Coaching and Consulting. For more information about real estate coaching or to watch Brian's training videos, check out therealestatetrainer.com or find us on social media. And remember, don't forget to subscribe to this podcast so you get the latest episodes as soon as they're available.